True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
How awesome is the outfield position? Well, they only take up four of the first five picks in average draft position. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today, and welcome to our outfield preview part one. Frank Sample back and joined, as always, with Scott White and Chris Towers. First, a thank you to both of you for holding it down last week. And I want to thank everybody who checked in over the weekend. Feeling a lot better, and am excited to be back. As I mentioned, we're hitting the outfield today, but before we do that, I did want to let everybody know about Paramount Plus. You've probably seen the Journey to Mount Paramount spots featuring Bill Cowher, James Corden, Patrick Stewart, Beavis and Butthead. Yeah, quite a squad. But Paramount Plus is live sports, breaking news, and a mountain of entertainment. You can go straight from game day to movie night with Paramount Plus. Stream iconic movies like The Godfather, Indiana Jones, and Mission Impossible, and new episodes of critically acclaimed original series like Star Trek, Picard, The Good Fight, and The Stand. And get this, it's where you can dive into live sports from us, CBS Sports, including the NFL, March Madness, the Masters, and Champions League Soccer, plus stream hit shows from CBS, Nickelodeon, MTV, BET, Smithsonian Channel, and Comedy Central. Live sports, breaking news, and a mountain of entertainment. Paramount Plus streaming March 4th. Scott is here, and I would like to ask how your weekend was, Scott, but I know it was your anniversary, and this is a family show. So we will talk about the outfield instead, and specifically when it comes to drafting outfielders in Roto versus head-to-head points. Roto, you need five outfielders typically in your starting lineup, whereas in head-to-head points and head-to-head categories, you usually only need three of that position. So how does your strategy change when drafting for each format?
It actually doesn't. I know the logical answer would be you need to focus on outfielder a little earlier in a roto league, a five outfielder league, just because you have more of those spots to fill. But you have more of everything to fill, I guess, except pitchers. Well, even pitchers. So I think where outfield, the good thing about outfield is that there are just so many of them that you can find everything there. And I mean everything in terms of talent levels. You can find your studs. You can find your, you know, not quite studs, but really good players. And then there's just like a mountain of sleepers at the end of it, just because there are so many bodies there. And it, specifically for a roto league or a categories league, you can find people who meet very specific category needs, like a ton of base stealers there, even guys who can help you in that category late, batting average specialists. So it's, even though the infield positions are deeper than they've ever been, I still like what's available in the outfield in those very late stages of the draft. I still like what's available in the outfield more than anywhere else. And so, you know, probably my last two hitter spots to fill in a roto league are probably going to be outfielders. That's just always the way it goes. And I might not get my first outfielder until round 10 or 11, just because I feel like there's a lot more to miss out on at other positions early on.
Chris is here. What's up, Chris? How's life?
Oh, hi.
What's up, man? Is it regarding outfielders in a head-to-head points league, when you only need three of them, do you find yourself maybe shying away from them earlier on in drafts, or will you be cognizant of filling the spots too early in a draft because you only need three of them in that format?
I'm never cognizant of anything. No, I mean, really, you want to draft the best players, and for the most part, positional scarcity isn't that big of a concern. And where you might be concerned that you fill in your outfield too early is in those three outfielder leagues, but positional scarcity is arguably even less of a thing in those leagues because you only have one of each position to try to fill. So, you know, you usually don't run out of good options. There are definitely times, sure, where you've drafted too many outfielders early, and then your best player for like three rounds in a row is an outfielder, and you kind of feel like you're wasted. But like, that's a good problem to have. And your starting lineup in week one is not going to be your starting lineup in week three, let alone week 23. And so you shouldn't worry about that too much. You should, if you have too many good outfielders, it'll work itself out.
Yeah, it usually does. Regarding this position mentioned today is going to be part one of our preview. So we're going to hit the top 25 players-ish in ADP, some sleepers, breakouts, and busts as well. But I really do want to give the due diligence to the top of this position here. And I know some people complain, well, when are you going to get to like the mid-level talent and the later round talent? Don't worry. We're doing two preview episodes for this position, so we'll have a lot of that on tomorrow's podcast as well. Is this position good? I think so. I think it's really damn good. There's a lot of elite talent up top. I think that you can hit it in the mid-tier as well, but maybe these guys feel differently. So let's jump into some of that ADP analysis. And the consensus top four outfielders, I think people are going to disagree on what order they have them, but it seems like there's a pretty obvious consensus top four, including Ronald Acuna, who's going at pick 1.2 on average, Mookie Betts 2.0, not Mookie Betts 2.0, like there was a different version of Mookie Betts. His ADP is 2.0. Juan Soto at 4.2 and Mike Trout at 4.4. That is ADP according to Fantasy Pros, and it seems like all four of these players have a great combination of both floor and ceiling. Scott, how would you rank this group in Roto versus head-to-head points? How does it change for you? That's Acuna, Betts, Soto, and Trout.
So I rank them in a categories league, a Roto league, 5x5 league, whatever you want to call it. I rank them exactly how they go here in ADP: Acuna, then Betts, then Soto. Recently moved him ahead of Trout. If it was a points league, Acuna goes to the back of that group, and he's still fourth in the outfield rankings, but you know, he slides behind a few other players at other positions too in a points league, because the main thing you're paying for with Acuna is the massive amount of stolen bases he's expected to give you. And while those are still worth something in a points league, they're not essential like they are in a categories league. So you can live without them and you don't have to pay up for them. And the amount of points Acuna is going to give you is likely less than those other three, Betts, Soto, and Trout.
The one thing to keep in mind, however, would be that if he was able to get his bat back to the 2019 levels while keeping 2020's plate discipline numbers, he could belong at the top of that group as well.
This is
because Ronald Acuna spiked his walk rate up to like 19% last season. It did come with a career high strikeout percentage, but
right. He's the worst strikeout rate four by far.
Yeah. The jump and strikeout rate wasn't as bad as the jump and walk rate was good. So I haven't run the numbers, but I would imagine that would be a net positive.
Yeah. It felt like entering last season, there was more of a discrepancy between what we were expecting from Acuna in a Roto league versus a points league. So that plate discipline improvement that we saw last year, that massive walk rate, definitely helps for Acuna in that format. And I would say I expect the batting average to bounce back just based on the quality of contact that he makes. He hits the ball so, so hard. His BABIP last year for Acuna, 302. The year before it was 337. It was 352 as a rookie. So I would expect that to bounce back a little bit. He was playing banged up.
It was a wrist injury, I think, right?
For Acuna last season. Fun fact regarding Mike Trout and Mookie Betts, they are the only two hitters, not just outfielders, to average at least four fantasy points per game in each of the past three seasons. So they really do both excel in that format. Chris, I'll throw this one your way. How concerned are you with the potential RBI projections for both Ronald Acuna and Mookie Betts? Both are expected to hit leadoff with the pitcher now batting ahead of them in the National League because there's no NLDH. So does that worry you at all, the RBI, potential RBI output for either one?
It's a little worrying, but you know, Acuna did drive in 101 runs in 2019 while playing most of his games as a leadoff hitter. I don't think he did all of them, but the switch was fairly early on. And, you know, last year it was like a 75 to 80 RBI pace. I would think it's probably something like, actually, it was even higher than that because he only played 46 games. So it was probably like an 85 RBI pace. I still think you're expecting 90 RBI from him. And because you're talking about a guy who could hit 40 home runs. And I still think, I mean, yes, you might be losing a little bit of RBI, but he might score 130 runs at the top of that Braves lineup. So you're paying for, you're losing one, but you're gaining the other. I don't think it matters so much.
I brought this up before, I think when we were doing the outfield tiers podcast, but the last 162 games for Ronald Acuna, 150 runs scored, which is, he's averaging almost a run scored per game. Over the last 162. So yeah, I mean, especially with his improved walk rate, you know that he's going to score a lot of runs as well. And we've seen even like great leadoff hitters in the past. DJ LeMahieu did it in 2019. He had over 100 RBI. Charlie Blackmon has done that in the past for the Rockies. So it is not impossible. I'll put it that way.
And the other thing you have to keep in mind is they're batting at the top of really good lineups. So both Mookie Betts, and I think especially Ronald Acuna, could be, you know, in line for 700 plate appearances. You know, it's possible that you're talking about a difference between, you know, Ronald Acuna and let's say Juan Soto, who among the top hitters is probably going to bat lowest in the lineup. You're probably looking at Ronald Acuna getting a 10% bump in plate appearances.
Yep. It's a really, really good point as well. And I think that's something that also helps him in points leagues because obviously more opportunities for fantasy points only helps, right? So more plate appearances equals more fantasy points. I've recently moved Juan Soto ahead of Mike Trout in both formats as well. I heard you guys talking about it on Friday's podcast regarding this new report that we got that Juan Soto wants to run more. And I don't see why he wouldn't based on that report, right? I mean, Scott, you usually bring up the fact that stolen bases are mostly motivation, right? So if he's talking about doing it more, why wouldn't he actually do it more? Not like I'm projecting a ton more steals. Like I'm expecting Soto to go like 25 steals or something, but I think this helps his floor get up to around 15. I don't think that's crazy for Juan Soto. So I have moved him ahead of Mike Trout in both formats as well.
Yeah. It's largely a matter of intent, but it's kind of, I don't know, catch 22. I'm not sure if that's the right application here, but where it's largely a matter of intent. Yes. But still, people, particularly in an athletic context, they don't always follow through on what they say. So I think more than anything, and I said this on the last show with Chris, what it tells me is that the stolen bases aren't going anywhere because that's what usually happens to middle of the order hitters when their bat becomes so valuable that it's not worth having them run anymore. And Soto would certainly fit into that category. I mean, we've kind of seen that with Trout. It took a while for Trout to get there, but that's essentially where he's arrived. It's not like he's slow all of a sudden.
Well, that's the thing is that Juan Soto is kind of slow.
Yeah.
Like his sprint speed through three seasons, the highest it's been is 59th percentile. There was a big drop to 32nd percentile last season. Maybe that's a result of, you know, a small sample size and he didn't have all that many competitive runs because he was hitting so many home runs and doubles. And, you know, he just didn't have that many opportunities to put it into high gear. Or it could be that he's always been he's a big dude and he's filling out and maybe he's just, you know, not going to be particularly fleet of foot. And so this question is always so hard because Mike Trout is still, I think, 94th percentile in sprint speed or was last season. He's actually like right behind Ronald Acuna and Fernando Tatis and these guys who are 10 years younger than him. And so if you were asking me who could steal 20 bases between him and Juan Soto, I think Mike Trout has definitely the skill set to do it.
Right.
We haven't gotten a quote saying he wants to.
Right. And since the totals tapered off the past couple years, and I've pointed this out before, we saw it happen to Trout earlier in his career. It looked like they were tapering off. They came back. So, you know, I don't think we can completely rule out Trout being, you know, maybe a 15 to 20 steal guy. Even Manny Machado, his steals total has gone up and down. It happens, but clearly you can't count on Trout for steals anymore. And I think this report from Soto wanting to steal more bases at least tells me stolen bases are going to remain part of his game. I don't know if he's really going to up the rate that he runs. He's going to be a 30-30 guy all of a sudden. I'm not counting on that, but I at least feel confident, more confident with Soto than Trout, that stolen bases are going to remain a part of his game.
Yeah, you guys referenced it. The last time Trout's stolen bases were declining 3 years in a row, that was in 2013, 14, and 15. The very next year in 2016, he went on to steal 30 bases. So is it impossible? No, he's still a freak athlete. It's just a matter of, does he actually do it? So we'll be watching for Mike Trout, whether or not he will. The last thing I'll point out on Mike Trout is, as great as he has been on a per game basis, he has missed an average of 33 games per season from 2017 to 2019. So he's usually due for at least one IL stint. I don't know how much stock you want to put into that, but it is a factual statement that he has missed time. Christian Yelich seems like he's become a bit of an island player here on ADP at 11.8. He's kind of like the middle point between the outfielders we just talked about and then that group of Cody Bellinger and Bryce Harper that we're about to get to. But Scott, what the hell happened to Yelich last year?
Well, he was one of several players who the strikeout rate just exploded. It was much higher than we've ever seen from him before. And given the odd circumstances of the season, the buildup and then slowing down and then building up hurriedly and not having access to video in games, and just so much weirdness going on, I'm kind of giving all those guys a pass. In Christian Yelich's case specifically, all the other underlying data still looks amazing. I think in terms of exit velocity, hard hit rate, I think it was his best ever, right?
Yeah.
I don't have it pulled up here, but it was, so best ever. It's just he struck out 30% of the time when he's normally a 20%. That's a huge increase. And then I think he had some bad BABIP luck on top of it because the expected stats look better than the actual stats. And I mean,
and he's always been a high BABIP guy.
Yeah, I think he's going to come roaring back. And you know, wouldn't it surprise me if he's in the MVP discussion again? I don't have any hesitation to take him late in the first round. It's hard to take him over some of those other guys who can contribute in five categories and actually did it last year. And, you know, some of the elite pitchers, given the scarcity of that position, the demand for those elite hurlers. But, you know, you get to a point there at the end of the first round where there's a drop off in talent and Yelich has got to go right then.
It's kind of like if Juan Soto had Christian Yelich's 2019 season, but with half as many steals, I feel like we would be thrilled with that outcome. He had 329 with 44 homers, 197 combined runs in 130 games, and he stole 30 bases. If Juan Soto does that and steals 15 bases, I think people would be absolutely like astonished. I think that would be like a, wow, Juan Soto's such a monster. And Christian Yelich already did that, except he stole 30 bases. I mean, he was on a 50 homer, 35 steal pace. I think, you know, I'm right there with you, Scott. I have him $4 less than Mike Trout and Juan Soto, and you know, $1 behind Acuna and Betts. After that, Acuna and Betts are $5 ahead of him. Sorry, but I would not be at all surprised if he out earns all of them.
That season that Chris mentioned in 2019, absolutely massive year. Christian Yelich finishes the third best player in Roto despite playing just 130 games. He averaged 4.7 fantasy points per game in 2019, which was by far the best amongst all hitters that season. And I will just add this to everything that you guys have said. He was coming back last year from a fractured kneecap. That was why he only played 130 games in 2019. So he basically missed all of September in that season because of a fractured kneecap. I think he fouled the ball off of his knee and that's how that happened. Yep. So Yeah, I mean, if
he would have won another second MVP in a row if he hadn't gotten hurt that year, probably.
If you need another reason to buy back in on him, he was coming back from that injury last year. So I will just let's wrap it up with this on Yelich, Scott. The confidence-o-meter, 1 to 10. 10, you are the most confident in this player. There's no chance that this player can bust on Christian Yelich. 1 to 10.
Well, I think if I was going to say 10, even though, you know, that's what the heart wants to do, then I'd have to rank him in the top five, right? So I'll say 9.
Fair enough. Chris, yeah. Same?
Yeah, 9. I think Mookie and Juan Soto are probably the only, or Mookie and Mike Trout are the only 10s out there.
The second round is dominated by Cody Bellinger at pick 15, who also has first base eligibility, and we spoke about him quite a bit on our first base position preview podcast, and Bryce Harper going at 18.6 in ADP. Chris, why would anyone take Cody Bellinger over Bryce Harper? Unless it's just an age thing, because Bellinger is 25 years old and Harper is 28, so maybe, you know, maybe that actually matters to some people, but Harper has been better than Bellinger in two of the past 3 years, and I think it's pretty clear that Bellinger's floor is lower than Bryce Harper's, and now he's coming back from shoulder surgery. So why are people taking Bellinger over Harper?
His displayed upside in recent years has been higher. You know, Harper has been really good, but, you know, he's maxed out at 268 batting average over the last three seasons. He's maxed out at 35 home runs, maxed out at 15 stolen bases. Well, I guess that's a little higher than Bellinger's max stolen bases, or it's the same. Bellinger, he had that 2019 season where it's a 305 average, 47 home runs. It's, you know, 236 combined runs in RBI. If Bellinger maximizes his skill set, it's probably going to be better than Harper, although I don't think we can rule out the possibility that Harper still has. I mean, he has one of the best seasons we've seen by a hitter of the last decade, his 2015 season. His 2017 season was not quite as good, but was still very much an MVP caliber season if he had stayed healthy. So I don't think we want to rule out the possibility that Bryce Harper could play like a top five player because he has that stolen base potential as well.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up regarding Bellinger. Sorry, Scott, I'll let you jump in here. But, you know, I think if people wanted to argue that Bellinger's upside is higher and he finished as the fifth overall player in 2019 when he won the MVP, I mean, Harper's upside, we've seen it in 2015. You know, if you want to say that, all right, he's too
far. It's just a long time ago.
Yeah, he's too far removed from that. I guess that's a fair argument, but
he
was the top six player, and his StatCast numbers, Scott, Bryce Harper's StatCast numbers were really, really good last year. So why? Why are people taking Bellinger over Harper?
2015 was a long time ago when he won the MVP, had that amazing season, but his expected stats, according to StatCast, were even better last year than they were in that 2015 season. He only hit 268, slugged 542 last year. At surface level, I mean, it was good. It was still a good redemptive season for Bryce Harper, but he was, according to StatCast, expected batting average should have been 307 versus 268. Expected slug should have been 657 as opposed to 542. And even if you want to say, okay, that's, you know, I don't know how much I want to buy into that completely. You just look at the way his plate discipline changed last year. It was the first year in his career that Bryce Harper walked more than he struck out. And the improvement in strikeout rate, especially, I mean, what was really scaring me about Bryce Harper was the way the strikeouts kept going up and up and up. 26.1% was the highest it reached in 2019. You know, that's getting to a real concerning level. You really start to wonder about the batting average potential at that point. It dropped from 26.1% in 2019 to 17.6%. It went from the career worst strikeout rate to the career best strikeout rate. And I understand it was in a small sample.
Yeah.
But still, from a guy who we've seen put up MVP caliber numbers before, and considering that specifically was the biggest concern surrounding him, the reason I was starting to consider Bryce Harper not a fantasy stud anymore, I think it's very encouraging. I'm getting to the point that I might be about to the point of dropping Bellinger behind Harper, actually. Mostly, you know, all that stuff for Harper helps, but it has just as much to do with my concerns about Bellinger. The fact he's coming off shoulder surgery, hasn't even been taking full swings yet here. spring training's getting ready to start. He's not back to swinging a bat in full yet. And he had all the mechanical stuff going on last year. It just seems like for a second round pick, those are more worries than I want to take on when you have an exciting alternative here in Harper.
Yeah. Regarding Bellinger, excuse me. He is only taking one-handed swings as of now, and Dave Roberts said that once they get into spring training, they'll see how Bellinger responds to taking swings every single day, and that's when they'll know like where he's at. That's a lot of risk to be putting in your late first, early second round pick. So I love the player Bellinger. You know, I'm not knocking him. I just think the situation regarding the shoulder surgery, and let's be honest, last year was really not that great for Bellinger. Struggled against lefties two of the past three seasons. I just have concerns with him being drafted that early. So I will be taking Bryce Harper ahead of Cody Bellinger. But after Harper goes around pick 18, 19, we don't see another outfielder drafted until Eloy Jimenez at pick 35. So there's a pretty big drop there to the end of the third, early fourth round. There are six outfield eligible players being drafted in rounds 3 and 4. That includes the aforementioned Eloy Jimenez, Kyle Tucker at pick 37, Luis Robert at 39, Whit Merrifield, who also has second base eligibility at pick 40, Marcell Ozuna at pick 44, George Springer, who is now with the Toronto Blue Jays, at pick 48. And there are a lot of decision points here, but it's a very interesting group. I want to focus on each one of these players individually. And I'll start with you, Chris, because I know that you've been a little bit skeptical regarding Eloy Jimenez. What is stopping him from being the next elite four category contributor? Because I think we have a potential Nolan Arenado type player in the outfield regarding Eloy Jimenez. So what do you think?
There are not many very good fantasy players with Eloy Jimenez's profile, specifically with regards to plate discipline. Over the course of his career, he basically has 5 strikeouts for every walk. I can't think of another player. I think Jose Abreu probably comes closest, but he doesn't strike out nearly as much as Eloy Jimenez. It's really hard to come up with a player like that who doesn't steal bases and is a very good fantasy player. Nolan Arenado, okay, you want to mention that. Well, Nolan Arenado has been consistently a below average strikeout player. The other problems for Eloy Jimenez, he scored 26 runs in 55 games last season. That's a 70-run pace over 150 games. He's played 177. He scored 95. That's like an 85-run pace, or maybe a little bit below in a 150-game season. So you're kind of looking at a guy who's going to be a zero in stolen bases, quite literally a zero through 177 games. And he's going to be, I think, a below average stolen or run producer, runs specifically. So that means he needs to justify I think it's very unlikely he justifies a top 36 pick. But, to be a high end hitter, he basically needs to be a standout in home runs and batting average. And he hits a lot of balls on the ground. He's got a 49% ground ball rate. It's not an Eric Hosmer-esque number, but it is quite a lot for a power hitter. And so, yes, he has a career 28% home run to fly ball rate. Yes, he has a career, 318 BABIP. And so you put all those things together, and he can get to a 290 average and 35 to 40 home runs and be really, really good. It's a really narrow, narrow path to get there. And I think there's a lot of branches on that path where he hits 260 with 32 home runs and he's fine, but sort of replaceable.
Does have a pretty extensive injury history as well, but continue, Chris.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot more ways that Eloy Jimenez goes wrong, especially as the 34th pick or 35th pick, than goes right.
Go ahead, Scott.
It's a little higher than I'd like to see. Yeah. I think part of it is people factoring in continued improvement. He took a big step from year one to year two, and he's only 24 and obviously has the elite prospect pedigree. A small adjustment, I think, from being Eloy Jimenez is from being Marcell Ozuna. And, my rationale is, well, if he's trying to become Marcell Ozuna, take Ozuna first, right? And so I do rank Ozuna ahead. Ozuna's going 20 spots behind.
Oh, only five?
No, five spots. Okay. Just five spots behind Luis Robert. But I do rank Ozuna ahead. So, you know, I'm probably not going to get much Robert either. But you could make the argument too. I mean, Ozuna just had a career season and, you know, it had been several years since he performed anywhere near that level. So maybe people are reluctant to buy into Ozuna completely too. I don't have as much of a problem as Chris does with Jimenez going here, I guess. But it's a little high for me, I guess.
Yeah, I've resigned myself to know I'm not getting him. And if I don't, I mean, I guess he takes a step forward and makes me look really bad. But otherwise, if the skill set stays relatively constant,
yeah,
I think it's a relatively replaced. Like, there probably isn't that big of a difference between the most likely outcome for Michael Conforto.
My opinion may be colored by the fact that I said, oh, it's going to, Eloy Jimenez, where he's going last year is going to depend on him taking a step forward. And then he took that step forward and made me look bad. So
the last thing I'll add on Eloy Jimenez is, as much as he hits balls on the ground, which we don't like to see, 51% ground ball rate, he hits the ball as hard as anybody.
Yeah.
98th percentile hard hit rate, 96th percentile barrel rate. It's kind of similar to Juan Soto in that, yes, they hit too many ground balls, but when they hit the ball in the air, it's like elite level contact in the air. So it kind of mitigates the fact that they walk, that they hit the ball on the ground as much as they do. Of course, we wish that they wouldn't. Scott, Kyle Tucker just finishes the 35th overall player in Roto, 3.3 fantasy points per game. What do you think about his cost here at pick 37? It seems a little bit more doable in Roto versus head-to-head points.
Yeah, I mean, in Roto, you gotta pay a little more than you'd like for stolen bases. That's just the way it is. And Kyle Tucker, between the majors and the minors, he's shown he can be a reliable source of those. He is of the sort of profile where I wonder if that's going to be a long-standing thing for him. But going into year two, I would count on him for steals. And anybody who contributes steals while contributing a lot of other things is going to be an early rounder in that format. There are outfielders who, just as pure hitters, I trust them on a higher level than Tucker. His former teammate, George Springer, for instance. But George Springer's not stealing bases, so Tucker has to go ahead. That's really what it comes down to.
Luis Robert is going two picks later than Kyle Tucker. And it was an interesting season for Robert because he got off to this great start. First 33 games, .298 batting average, 10 home runs, 4 steals, with a 31% strikeout rate, which you don't love to see, obviously, but he was, performing in spite of it. But his final 23 games from September 1st on, a .136 batting average for Robert, 1 home run, still ran. He had 5 steals during that time. The strikeout rate went up to 34%. His hard contact rate, final 23 games, 18%, just looked completely lost at the plate. Chris, who is the real Luis Robert, and who would you take between him and Kyle Tucker in a Roto league?
I think I have Kyle Tucker like one or two spots ahead in the overall rankings. I have them with the same salary. So I don't think there's much of a difference there. I have pretty similar expectations. Robert probably has a little more stolen base potential, but there are some really frightening things in Luis Robert's profile. He swings at everything. He had a 57% swing rate last year, 82% in the zone, which is pretty good, but 43% on pitches outside of the strike zone. And he had the third lowest contact rate in baseball. It was only better than Keston Hira, which, red alert, and Miguel Sano. Miguel Sano was higher than Keston Hira last year. Big red alert for Keston Hira, but also, pretty concerning for Luis Robert that he was in the Miguel Sano neighborhood there. He's outrageously talented. He's a ridiculously skilled or talented baseball player. I don't know if he's yet a skilled baseball player, but he's probably going to steal 20 plus bases, maybe 25 or 30, and he's going to hit for power. And if he hits .240, I think you live with it if he's hitting 30 homers and stealing 20 bases.
Luis Robert is kind of like the Adalberto Mondesi of the outfield. He doesn't have as much speed and he walks more. So I want to give him credit where it's due, but a 22% swinging strike rate for Luis Robert last season as a rookie, that was number one among qualified hitters. last season. Scott, you mentioned Marcell Ozuna a few times already. He just finished as the number one outfielder in both Roto and head-to-head points in 2020. I'll just lump him and George Springer together. It seems like they really excel in the points league format. But, I mean, they're useful regardless. But I would say they're probably better in points. What do you think about both of those guys, Springer and Marcell Ozuna?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to take them over some of the base dealers in points leagues. But you mentioned it. Marcell Ozuna was the number one outfielder in both formats last year. I don't think he's going to do quite that again because that had him hitting 338, you know, and that's just, I'd bet against most any player repeating that number. But I do think the direction Ozuna went last year, taking the stud turn, I do think it was more or less legitimate. He was somebody who we looked at. We looked at some of the Statcast numbers for him heading into last season and like, wow, this guy has been underachieving for a while now. And last year with the Braves, it seemed like he figured out how to get the most of his tools and live up to those expected stats. I do want to follow up with something about Robert, because I actually, among everybody we've named at this position so far, he's the one that I think has the most bust potential. My busts 2.0 are actually coming out tomorrow, and he's one of the more high-profile players in it. In addition to having that bat, like, I used to write off any player who had the kind of strikeout rate Luis Robert did last year, just immediately, not worth the time. I used to write them all off. Who really changed my mind on that was Aaron Judge. And we've seen others like Joey Gallo, Miguel Sano at times, but the players who overcome a strikeout rate that high, the strikeout rate like Robert had last year, make exceptionally hard contact, like top of the league type exit velocities. And Robert, 34th percentile in average exit velocity last year. His hard hit rate, you know, if you just wanted to pay attention to the upper end, 56th percentile. It wasn't a standout in that category. And, you know, obviously just starting his career, chance he gets better at that. There's a chance he gets better very quickly. You know, I called Fernando Tatis a bust heading into last year. And he got better really quickly. And Robert could too. But for the price, I just think there's too much downside. And he showed it in September.
Chris, among this group, Scott, did you have anything else to say?
That was it.
No, I was going to say that it just does sound like a lot like Fernando Tatis. And one place that I think they both have in common is the barrel rate was higher than the rest of their kind of expected or their various Statcast data. And, you know, I think that what that tells you is that they're both exceeding on the very high end. You know, barrels are batted balls hit over X mile per hour between X degrees of launch angle.
It's optimal contact, basically.
Yeah, basically. And Luis Robert had a 13% mark in 2020. That is right around where Fernando Tatis was at 13.2%. So that's the one thing, is that there's just, it's kind of like that max exit velocity versus average exit velocity, where, you know, maybe barrel rate is kind of a proxy for potential. And it's just a question of whether he can put it together.
Chris, just give me a name among this group. Eloy Jimenez, Kyle Tucker, Luis Robert, Marcell Ozuna, George Springer, the outfielder you're most likely to take.
Most likely to take is probably Marcell Ozuna.
Scott?
I would agree. I hardly ever take an outfielder from this range. This is kind of the outfield dead zone in my mind. You mentioned how few outfielders are going off the board on average here after a lot in the first two rounds. And usually I'm just focused on starting pitcher. I'm usually focused on whichever third baseman falls between Bregman and Rendon. I'm drafting Corey Seager or somebody like that. I mean, I'm really not focused on outfield yet, which is why I usually end up taking my first outfielder really late.
And I usually don't have that big of a, I just don't have that big of a drop off after this point at outfield. Whereas it seems like there is one in ADP.
If you are watching on video, don't go anywhere. If you're listening on the podcast, we are going to take a quick break. But when we return, we will hit sleepers, breakouts, and busts here on Fantasy Baseball Today. If you've ever been in the market for a new home, you know home shopping can be a lot. There's so much you don't know and so much you need to know. What are the neighborhoods like? What are the schools like? Who is the agent who knows the listing or neighborhood best? And why can't all this information just be in one place? Well, now it is on Homes.com. As somebody who's been through this, I can tell you these features are so, so incredibly valuable. They've got comprehensive neighborhood guides and detailed reports about local schools, and their agent directory helps you see the agent's current listings and sales history. The area you live in is just as important as the house itself. You can get to know a neighborhood without ever setting foot in it. Say you're a really active person. You could find out about the nearest parks. Do they have a baseball field? Maybe you want to join a softball league like Chris and I play in. Also, Homes.com collaboration tools makes it easier than ever to share all this information with your family. It's a whole cul-de-sac of home shopping information all at your fingertips. Homes.com, we've done your homework. Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com. And we're back. Sleepers, breakouts, and busts. Scott, why don't you get us started with a sleeper at the outfield position?
Lot to choose from here, it being such a big position. I'm going to go with Trey Mancini, though, as my favorite outfielder to draft. Coming off, he missed all of 2020 dealing with colon cancer. Obviously, a serious health battle for him. But he seems to be back on track. He's obviously reporting to spring training. He says he's back to 100%. And this is a guy who in 2019, when we last saw him playing, it was, I like to call it JD Martinez type numbers, batting average over 290. He hit 35 home runs, I think. I can never get this to load. Is
yeah, that's
when I need it.
35 home runs, 106 runs, 97 RBI, and 899 OPS. For Trey Mancini in 2019.
And look, nobody was expecting him to do that. So, even heading into last year, early on, before the colon cancer was discovered, we saw him going the 9th, 10th round range, but I was way into him then. And now that he's going even later, if he has a clean bill of health, I think he's going to be fine. I think we should approach him as we were coming out of 2019, and if that's the case, it means he's going several rounds too late. And so I'm happy to take him in the 15th round. He's exactly the kind of player who I think makes it justifiable to pass up on outfielders early, because he's somebody you can grab late who may end up performing like an early rounder at the position.
Mancini is a perfect example of a player, too, where if he looks good in the spring, if he starts hitting a few home runs, his ADP is just going to skyrocket too. So keep that in mind if you're drafting early here regarding Trey Mancini. Chris, in between wrestling your cat, why don't you give us a sleeper here
in the outfield position? Right now. I'll go with a little bit of a deeper sleeper, and that is Joe Adell. It's not clear what his... It doesn't seem like he's going to have a role on the Angels opening day roster, and that seems to be more clear after the acquisition of Dexter Fowler. However, it is worth keeping in mind that this is a guy who he made his professional debut as a 21-year-old, and he had 224 career games played. That is a remarkably small number of games for a very young player to have made their major league debut. Obviously, injuries have played a part in that. Not having the opportunity to play minor league games last season played a part in that. But I do just want to point that out, because this guy was, one of the top prospects in baseball. I think the consensus was right around number two or number three last season. And there were some bad stuff in his major league debut. He had the lowest in zone contact rate in baseball. That's really bad. It was really easy to get him to swing and miss. He needs to cut his strikeout rate a lot. But average exit velocity of 90.6 miles per hour, max exit velo of 115.5 miles per hour. Like I said, that is a, you know, usually a pretty good proxy for raw power. He is, Joe Adell is someone who is probably going to have to go down to the minors and prove himself. But with a hot spring training and a hot start down in AAA, I think it's entirely possible Joe Adell comes back to the majors fairly early and, you know, turns into a five category stud. Let's not forget, totally unfair comparison, and I'm not saying he is this guy at all, but Mike Trout was a disaster in his first taste of the majors. He was, you know, a couple years younger, but Joe Adell was still very young. So I will throw him out there. He's someone I like stashing at the end of my bench in a roto league.
Yeah, I've made that comp before too, not based on the talent or what we're expecting, but yeah, Mike Trout struggled when he first came up. I don't think it's, what I do think is crazy is that Joe Adell's ADP right now is 348. So we're usually so quick to write off prospects who just don't succeed right away. So he'll get some seasoning in the minors, but I guarantee you Dexter Fowler is not going to stop Joe Adell from returning to the majors if he is performing well down in the minors. Sleeper for me, no surprise here. You see the Yankee stuff behind me. Clint Frazier, ADP 181. He has shown us flashes. He has a very quick bat and some Statcast numbers that back it up to an 11% barrel rate for his career. League average is 6.4%. The biggest issue for Clint Frazier has just been getting consistent playing time. And last week, one of the first days of spring training, Aaron Boone said, he is our starting left fielder. Clint Frazier will start in left field, and I hope that doesn't change even with Brett Gardner returning to the team. So keep all those things in mind, but I think we can get, you know, 270-plus batting average, 30-plus home runs. I don't think it's crazy for Clint Frazier.
It won't change it.
Yeah,
Brett Gardner was with the team last year. Like, I don't know. I don't know why people just tuned out what the Yankees were doing with their outfield last year. This was already settled last year. Clint Frazier had the job and was great. I don't know why. I don't know why there was any doubt he was going to have it again.
Yeah, he's going to strike out quite a bit, probably around like 25 to 30%. But career best 15.6% walk rate for Clint Frazier last year as well. Should help mitigate some of those strikeouts in a points league. Scott, a breakout in the outfield.
Okay, so this was my big breakout for last year. It didn't go quite as planned, but I'm going there again with Nick Castellanos. Didn't go quite as planned, but he did hit 14 home runs in the 60-game season, and we've never seen that kind of output from power output from him over a full season. You know, the argument for him was, okay, he spent all those years in Detroit, a park that couldn't have been worse suited for him, very specifically him, because not only is it big, but it's big especially in right center where he hits a lot of fly balls. And so a lot of potential home runs were just killed there. And then he goes from there to Cincinnati, very small park. And we saw the power output, but we saw, you know, he ended up hitting only 225 because it was a short season and weird stuff happens in a short season. He's kind of this year's Marcelo Zuna, where if you look at the actual stats versus the expected stats, okay, Nick Castellanos should have been a lot better. Expected batting average of 273, expected slug of 542 versus 486, what he actually slugged. You know, the strikeout rate was higher than we're used to seeing. He had some bad BABIP luck. Castellanos did the kind of things you would expect to bring down somebody's numbers over a short sample. Brought down Nick Castellanos' numbers over a short sample. But I think if he had had an additional 4 months, we would have seen him continue with that kind of power output, and we would have seen him do all the other things we've always seen him do as a hitter. Hit a lot of line drives, be a good source of batting average. Potentially with all the free hits going over the fence, maybe he becomes a great source of batting average, as good of a line drive hitter as Nick Castellanos is. I still think there's like, you know, a Nolan Arenado, second player we've compared to Arenado this podcast, Nolan Arenado, like outcome in there for Nick Castellanos, and happy to take him at his going rate, which is 80. It's about the 80th player overall. So,
I mean, you know, Nolan Arenado does have an OPS right around 800 on the road. So,
yeah, but I mean,
maybe the comp isn't so off for Eloy Jimenez and Nick Castellanos.
I mean Nolan Arenado at face value, Chris. Don't go corrupting my argument here.
Don't do it. I do have a Nick Castellanos stat as well. Among 23 qualified hitters with a 25% line drive rate or better, Castellanos' 257 BABIP was by far the lowest, and he has a career 329 BABIP, so I would expect some batting average regression for Nick Castellanos. I'm in. 100%. I'm with you, Scott. My Breakouts 2.0 came out on Friday. You can check those out, cbsports.com, and Nick Castellanos is one of them. Chris, a breakout in the outfield.
Yeah, and I just want to add the Reds, just they had a 245 BABIP as a team that was 21 points lower than any other team in baseball last year.
What happened there?
It was the lowest for a full season. I don't know. I think they faced Trevor Bauer like three times. That was probably part of it. Or no, they didn't. He was on their team.
I was like, wait, maybe they
backed up Trevor Bauer.
Let's just edit that one out.
Maybe.
All right, a breakout for Chris. I'll throw out Austin Meadows as one. That's more like a re-breakout. My cat is being extremely insistent that I give really, her attention right now.
He was angry about the Trevor Bauer thing. He's like, how could you get that wrong, Chris?
But the one I want to focus on, Ian Happ, since returning from AAA last season, he has a 260 average, 880 OPS in 115 games with a 33 homer pace for 162. That is even more impressive than it sounds because he's only started 81 of those 115 games. He has 20 homers in those 81 starts. If you do the math, that is a 40 homer pace over 162 games. He is in the 84th percentile in average exit velocity, 89th in hard hit rate, 71st in expected slug. And the biggest thing he's fixed since his first stint in the majors, he's cut that strikeout rate to a much more manageable 25 to 27% range. I think Ian Happ can hit 265 with 35 homers. I don't think he's going to hit 40 homers, you know, especially with the deadened ball, but that's, you know, he's shown the power potential for that kind of thing. I could see him scoring 100 runs. I could see him driving in 80 runs. I could see him kind of being not that different from what I expect Eloy Jimenez to be with the runs and RBI just kind of swapped there. So, you know, I think Ian Happ, he's going about 150th overall. I think Ian Happ's going to have a really, really good season at the top of a much better Cubs lineup and be one of the better values in outfield this season.
Again, that is Ian Happ with an ADP of 155, according to Fantasy Pros. Breakout for me, I'm going to another former, I guess he's not a prospect anymore, but Dylan Carlson has an ADP of 165. He got off to a terrible start in 2020. He got sent back to the alternate site, and then when he returned, it was his 12 games, his final 12 games, he hit 278 with seven extra base hits and was making a lot more hard contact during that time. And in the postseason, he was walking. He hit cleanup all four games for the Cardinals. He's probably not going to do that now that they have Arenado, but I expect Carlson's going to bat fifth, maybe sixth, and then, you know, slowly move up the lineup there. But the lineup context for him is going to be really, really good. And he was a beast in the minors in 2019. I mean, the way we were talking about him last year, Dylan Carlson hit 292 with 26 home runs and 20 steals in the minors in 2019. So I'm not expecting those things, but I think a bit of a power speed combination.
Yeah. The only concern I have, and this was the concern going into last season, was 2019 was a significant outlier for his minor league track record. He had a 914 OPS that season. He had never had an OPS in a season higher than 738. He was young. They had been really aggressive with his promotions. And so there was some thought that this was always what they thought he could be. But, you know, the fact that he then followed up in the majors with a disappointing rookie season, I'm a little worried about it, I guess.
Well, Chris, I will let you know that Randy Arozarena had an OPS over 1,000 in the minors in 2019, and his previous high was 792. So, boom.
Yeah.
I don't know if that means anything. Probably not, but
it's, you know,
sometimes guys get better, and Dylan Carlson was really young. He was 19 in 2018.
Right. He was always very young for his level, and, you know, I'm gonna trust the evaluators on this, that it wasn't just smoke and mirrors, that breakout season. You know, part of player development is getting better. But we don't know until it happens. I think Carlson's a justifiable breakout pick, though, for sure.
Scott, give us a quick bust here in the outfield.
Okay, so the bust I was most confident in last year was Madison Bumgarner. The bust I'm most confident in this year is an outfielder named Teoscar Hernandez. And I don't understand why everybody else is so on board with Hernandez. Usually everybody's skeptical of the mid-career breakout. This mid-career breakout happens to come during a very short season, and it's like everybody's buying in, I guess, because, you know, he stole six bases, and so they're hoping they can get some speed there too. I don't know. Kind of a desperation pick. You want bad plate discipline? It's Teoscar Hernandez's 30.4% strikeout rate. You know, he's a guy who's always been over 30. It's just terrible. There wasn't enough improvement there for me to buy into him being this 289 hitter. Really, what fueled the breakout for Hernandez was just completely off the charts exit velocity and hard hit rate, like some of the best in all of baseball. Now, he was always pretty good at hitting the ball hard, but this was just a completely different level so far over what he did before that it kind of stands to reason over a short season, it probably just got hot, right? That's what it looks like to me. It's not like the batted ball profile changed for Teoscar Hernandez. He just did the stuff he normally does well, even harder over a small sample. Looks like a hot streak, guys. I'm sorry. I hate to break it to you, but I think Teoscar Hernandez is going to come crashing back down to earth.
Yeah, I mean, when a guy makes a jump in ADP from, this is correct, 332 last season, up to 76. I want to see new skills. And we didn't see anything new from Teoscar Hernandez. That's the thing, is that, like you said, we always knew he could hit the ball hard. We always knew he was a good athlete. We always knew he was fast. We didn't learn anything new about Teoscar Hernandez, but suddenly he's 260 picks more expensive. It doesn't make any sense. I'm 100% there with you.
I have a feeling Chris might not like my guy, Trent Grisham, but we'll talk more about him tomorrow. Chris, give me a bust in the outfield.
I'm not a Trent Grisham guy. He's definitely in my bust discussion. I think Teoscar Hernandez is as well. And Eloy Jimenez is my official pick as an outfield bust. And I don't think he's going to not be a fantasy relevant player. I just think there's a decent chance he gives you, I don't know, Max Kepler numbers. And Max Kepler costs a lot less, or Michael Conforto, or, you know, there's no shortage of guys who can hit for power, who don't steal bases, and, you know, might be a batting average liability.
Castellanos is the one, Chris, that I could see.
And sure, Castellanos is going 55 picks later than him.
And it's
45 picks later than him, yeah.
It's not a knock for me on Eloy, because I really do like him, but if Castellanos breaks out the way we think he could, I don't think that their lines would be that dissimilar.
Yeah, I think even Mike Yastrzemski could be pretty similar. It's the easiest skill set in baseball, and he has to really, really hit like his, you know, not his highest end outcome, but, you know, a relatively high one to stand out given his skill set.
The bust for me is a player who also has a similar skill set, but he hits the ball a little bit harder, probably the hardest in baseball outside of his teammate, of course. And Aaron Judge for me is going at pick 50 in ADP. I think the upside is still massive. If he stays healthy, he can hit 50 home runs in Yankee Stadium. It's not crazy. But the main reason I have him as a bust is because I think you can get very similar numbers to Judge in Giancarlo Stanton, who is going 60 picks later, legitimately 60 picks. His ADP is 110. Now, Stanton is utility only. He doesn't have outfield eligibility. So, you know, obviously that is something in the favor of Judge. Should it be worth 60 picks? I tend to lead towards no, it should not be worth that much. Both of them have their injury concerns. Judge has missed 37% of his games over the past three seasons. And these are recurring injuries too. I mean, it's oblique consistently. He's such a massive human being. I don't know that players who play baseball are supposed to be built the way that Aaron Judge is.
He's had serious injuries every single season of his major league career. Because you remember the almost MVP season, he needed shoulder surgery at the end.
Yeah.
You know, in the offseason.
Yeah. So it's another reason why, to me, I just think the price is too high at ADP 50. I will say, in a points league or in an OBP context, I can't really knock the pick, but in like any type of batting average 5x5 or head to head categories with batting average, I just think Aaron Judge doesn't really give you that much of a different skill set than someone like Giancarlo Stanton. So I was going to get to a few more players in ADP, but seeing as we don't have much time left, I'll just save these for tomorrow and we could just hit on 30 to 40 outfielders tomorrow if we can. Scott, let's wrap up with some prospects. Any names that we need to know in the outfield? I brought up the name Randy Arozarena once before, and he has an ADP inside the top 60 now. So what do you want to tell us about him? He is still prospect eligible. And any other names we need to notice in the outfield?
Well, there was no bigger prospect riser last year than Randy Arozarena, right? Like, it's amazing he still qualifies as a prospect, because if you factor in postseason, clearly would not. But just regular season at bats, he's technically there. So the combined 17 home runs he hit last year give you some insight into what he could be. And, you know, I'm not going to draft much of him because he's going 59th overall. So people are buying in 100% to what he's doing. I'm probably 85% buying in. So, you know, the fact that he steals some bases, I understand him going that early, but you know, you're not really factoring any possibility for regression there. And that concerns me a little. Other rookies, you mentioned Carlson already, Frank. He's obviously a big one. The outfielder who I would have highlighted for sleepers if I didn't highlight Trey Mancini would have been Alex Kirilloff, who is in line to take over for the Twins in left field this year. They actually called him up to start a playoff game. So he's you know, zero of major league stats officially, but he went 1-for-4 in a playoff game, Kirilloff did. And that shows you the level of trust they have in him. He's a guy who we've seen put up ridiculous numbers in the minors in the past. I remember he was getting some Christian Yelich comps. You know, he's not as athletic as Yelich, but just in terms of the kind of hitter he could be, he was getting some Christian Yelich comps after he hit 348 with 20 homers and 44 doubles 2 years ago, or in 2018, I should say. And then in 2019, the numbers went way down. He was dealing with a wrist injury. Apparently last year at the alternate training site, he got a lot of that back to full health. He was crushing the ball. Baseball America moved his hit score, his skill, you know, the skill scores they give out, the 20 to 80 scores. They give him a 70 hit tool. They give him a 60 power tool, and like 60 of anything is great. You don't see a lot of players get a 60 for anything. So for get a 60 for power, like Kirilloff did, which isn't even his best tool, and then to get a 70 for hitting, I mean, you're talking about a first division type hitter here in Kirilloff, who's now inheriting an everyday job for the Twins. It doesn't seem like it's a competition on any level. 268th player off the board, Kirilloff is. So love getting him as my fifth outfielder.
Scott, when do you think we see Jared Kelnick from the Mariners?
That's a tough one. I mean, the Mariners aren't expected to compete. I don't think they will. We will see him this year. I'm pretty confident in that. It's just a question of whether it'll be, you know, kind of a late May call-up. Early May call-up, I guess, is possible, or if they're going to wait until the Super 2 thing is off the table and call him up mid-summer. I haven't been as eager to draft him as Wander Franco. I think Franco has a better chance of being up early than Kelnick, but, you know, Kelnick's the one who's often mentioned as a possible candidate to be the top prospect in baseball alongside Franco there, and they're at very similar stages of their development, so Kelnick is deserving of some enthusiasm there too. There's probably a lot of outfield prospects that I haven't mentioned either. I just went on about Kirilloff so much and maybe missed some other ones. So
I had Christian Pache on the rundown from the
Braves. Christian Pache, right. Taking over as the Braves center fielder. Didn't put up big numbers in the minors, but
there are a lot of scouting
reports. It's like a Key Brian Hayes, Francisco Lindor kind of thing.
Right, because he makes contact at a good rate and extremely athletic. Defense, like he's going to be a multi-gold glove winner, Christian Pache is. So he's another one of those prospects, and some of the scouting reports actually talk about it, where you could see him taking a big step forward offensively in the majors. Not somebody I'm super eager to draft, but... you know, as a bench guy in a roto league, you know, just trying to hopefully catch a breakthrough there. You know, he has the job. Pache definitely has the job for the Braves. He was starting in the NLCS last year. It'll be exciting to see what he can do as a full-time major leaguer.
Yeah, I don't think it would be crazy for Pache to hit 15 homers and steal 15 bases this season. So that would definitely be useful as a fourth or fifth outfielder in a roto league. So just pay attention there. I don't know how much this is worth, but I saw this was going around Twitter on Sunday afternoon. We are recording this February 21st, but Seattle Mariners president Kevin Mather, basically
current Seattle Mariners.
Yeah.
President Kevin Mather. We'll see if he remains Seattle Mariners president Kevin Mather.
Yeah.
This week.
He basically embarrassed himself in the organization and said a bunch of stupid things, but among the things...
It was like a leaked video from like a... what was supposed to be like a private investors meeting or something like that.
Yeah. And he mentioned that they offered Kelnick a 6-year contract extension this offseason and he declined it and he's betting on himself. And he also said that Kelnick and Logan Gilbert would be up by late April. So I don't know if you want to trust that, but yeah, if you do, then you probably want to take Kelnick with one of the last picks in your redraft leagues because definitely could pay off dividends. One of the biggest prospects in baseball, Jared Kelnick, in 2019, hit .291, OPS over .900. That was across three different levels, 23 homers and 20 steals. So lots to be excited about there.
I think he's going to be a monster. I'm so excited for Jared Kelnick. Really, really think he could be like a first or second round type fantasy player in the future. He is he's really beefed up the last few years as well. And apparently at the at their alternate site, the Statcast numbers or whatever they would be were pretty off the charts for him. So I think he should be a base dealer.
I think he could be the
comp I made in my prospect profile for him last year was Francisco Lindor with more strikeouts or Trevor Story with fewer strikeouts. Obviously that's a ceiling comp, but you know, that kind of neighborhood isn't out of the question.
Yeah, I comped him to Austin Meadows 2019, but better potentially. So
I said Tommy Pham as well.
Yeah, it's not crazy there. If you've seen the videos, I mean, this guy hit a line drive off of a frisbee or something like that. So it's just gonna be absolutely awesome. It's great. Everyone's looking forward to Jared Kelnick, except for Mets fans, of course. Boom. Roasted. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening and watching Fantasy Baseball Today. We'll be back again tomorrow with our outfield preview part two. Bye-bye!
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.